Thank you. Let's begin. This session we recorded. Welcome to the ICANN 52 policy update webinar. And we thank you for joining us. I am David Olive, ICANN Vice President for Policy Development Support, and I'm happy to speak with you on this webinar from our regional headquarter hub in Istanbul, Turkey. As you know, the policy development support staff provides this briefing for the community in preparations for our ICANN meetings, in this case, ICANN 52 in Singapore. And so you'll be hearing from most of the staff based in various parts of the globe, like you are, I'm sure. So with that, I want to again welcome you and note that if you will be asking questions, you can put them into the chat, or we'll have time at the end of the session to take questions as well. And to that extent, we will have a full program for you and a lot of information to convey to you, but the slides, the presentations, the recording and the transcripts will be made available so that you can review them at your leisure in preparation for ICANN 52. Let me first go through some of the highlights of the ICANN 52 meeting. In particular, Monday, of course, we have our welcoming ceremony, and the supporting organizations and advisory committee have their session on high-interest topics. Tuesday is an important constituency and community day where the stakeholders and the constituency groups meet, exchange ideas, also have a meeting with the board of directors to convey their views and ask questions. It's a very lively and exciting day for the stakeholders at the ICANN meeting. Wednesday, many of the councils meet. We see the joint board meeting between the ICANN board and the Governmental Advisory Committee. The other supporting organizations are meeting as well. And we have the special APRALO showcase that you'll hear more about on this presentation. And finally, on Thursday, we have the ICANN Public Forum, community recognition, and board meeting on the end of that day. This particular meeting in Singapore has a focus on, obviously, the IANA stewardship transition and the ICANN accountability processes. And here are a few meetings that are taking place of the working groups and public briefing sessions on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday for those who are interested. And, of course, all these sessions will be able to be participating in remotely, or if you're in person, obviously, in the rooms that you will find in the program. ICANN's policy development activities relating to the technical coordination functions are formed and refined by the ICANN community through its three supporting organizations listed here and influenced by four advisory committees also listed here on the slide. All policy activities are comprised of volunteers, people on this call, and others in a bottom-up, multi-stakeholder, and open and transparent process. ICANN stakeholders includes companies that offer domain names to the public, registrars, companies that operate top-level domain registries, internet service providers, intellectual property interests, business users, non-commercial users such as academics and non-governmental organizations and nonprofits, and individual users and governments. Volunteer policy development activities start at the working group level and form around a policy issue, policy advisory, or other related ICANN issues. And many of these working groups are open to everyone in the ICANN community. At the moment, we have about 70 active working groups across the supporting organizations and advisory groups focusing on various ICANN policy and related issues. It shows how busy you are as our community. course, public comments are sought at every stage of the policy development process to let you and other interested community members provide their views and to ensure that policy recommendations reflect the concerns and perspectives of the broader community. And so we encourage and thank you for that input. And during this period, there are about 14 public comment processes open for input by you and our community. Let me turn to the goal of this webinar, which is to provide you with a current view of the policy development issues being looked at or advisory issues being looked at by our community as we embark on our meeting in Singapore, to review these issues, provide opportunities for you to provide input, answer any questions you may have, and, of course, please look at our webinar hashtag on your screen. Thank you again for taking the time to be with us, and I'll turn it over to my policy team members to brief you on some of the highlights. Marika, I pass it to you.
Thank you very much, David. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Marika Konings. I'm based in the ICANN office in Brussels and a senior policy director and team leader for the GNSO. I will first focus on a number of initiatives that are undertaken jointly by the different ICANN supporting organizations and advisory committees. And the first one of which is the cross-community working group to develop an internet assigned members authority, or IANA, stewardship transition proposal on naming related functions. As many of you are undoubtedly aware, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, or NTIA, announced on the 14th of March of last year its intent to transition key internet domain name functions to the global multi-stakeholder community. As part of that announcement, the NTIA asked ICANN to convene a multi-stakeholder process to develop a plan to transition the U.S. government stewardship role with regard to the IANA functions and the related root zone management. As the IANA functions cover different areas, namely numbers, protocol parameters, and names, and as a result also involve different affected communities, the idea was that each of those directly affected communities would take the lead in developing a transition proposal that relates directly to their area of interest. And in doing so, taking into account the four principles that NTIA has put forward as a requirement for the final transition proposal. And so this cross-community working group, which has been jointly formed by the Generic Name Supporting Organization, or the GNSO, the Country Code Supporting Organization, the CCNSO, and the Governmental Advisory Committee, the GAC, the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, the SAC, and the At-Large Advisory Committee, the ALEC, is basically the response of the naming community to this request to develop a transition proposal that specifically focuses on the IANA functions that relate to the domain name system. After weeks of intensive deliberations, which included a face-to-face meeting in Frankfurt, the CWG published its draft transition proposal for public comment on the 1st of December. So following the closing of the public comment forum, the CWG has been very busy reviewing the input received, which included at an intensive work weekend on the 10th and 11th of January, which consisted of 8 hours of CWG meetings. As a result of the diversity of comments received, the CWG has needed more time than originally anticipated to analyze and consider these comments, which included a number of alternative proposals and ideas that have been put forward. Furthermore, the linkage between the cross-community working group on enhancing ICANN accountability has become more apparent, which has resulted in enhanced communication and coordination between these two groups. Regardless, the CWG is keeping up the pace, which has resulted, for example, in, I think, 12 hours of conference calls alone just this week. Some of the key aspects the CWG is currently working on is obtaining legal advice on relevant aspects of the proposal, further conversations with the CCWG accountability on the linkage between the two efforts, and, of course, further work on developing the transition proposal. The CWG is planning to publish a discussion document prior to the ICANN meeting in Singapore to allow the community to provide further input on some of the key issues the CWG is dealing with. For those of you that are interested to learn more about this topic, there are a number of meetings scheduled in Singapore, as you can see on this slide. But I also wanted to flag here that in order to brief the community on this document, which is expected to be released on Monday, the CWG has also scheduled two webinars that will take place next week on Tuesday, the 3rd of February. And I can post the link to those webinars in the chat window in a second. Then moving on, and I'm just looking to the side if my colleague Bart Boswinkel has arrived, but I don't think he's here yet, so I'll cover this one as well. So the next one we want to talk about is the CCWG on enhancing ICANN accountability. No, don't do that. So as I was talking about before, during discussions around the IANA stewardship transition process, the community also raised a broader topic of the impact of the change on ICANN's accountability, given its historical contractual relationship with the United States and the NTIA. The concerns raised during these discussions around the transition process indicated that the existing ICANN accountability mechanisms do not yet meet stakeholders' expectations. Statements made by various stakeholders suggest that current accountability mechanisms need to be reviewed and, if need be, improved, amended, replaced, or supplemented with new mechanisms. See, for example, some of the recommendations that have been made by the accountability and transparency review teams. And in light of the changing historic contractual relationship with the U.S. government. Considering that the NTIA has stressed that it is expecting a community consensus regarding the transition, a failure to meet stakeholder expectations with regards to accountability may create a situation where NTIA may not accept the IANA transition proposal as meeting its conditions. Thus, reviewing ICANN's accountability mechanism was considered to be a crucial part of the transition process and overall conversations. So the CCWG is expected to organize its output in two work streams consistent with its charter. The work stream one is focused on mechanisms enhancing ICANN accountability that must be in place or committed to within the timeframe of the IANA stewardship transition. And secondly, there's a work stream two, which is focused on addressing accountability topics for which a timeline for developing solutions and full implementation may extend beyond the IANA stewardship transition. The CCWG held a face-to-face meeting in Frankfurt in Germany earlier this month on the 19th and 20th of January. It was attended by more than 50 members and participants, with an additional 40 participants and observers who joined the meeting remotely. The meeting led to significant progress, including initial agreement on a problem statement, a list of stress tests and requirements for work stream one. And these basic themes were identified in a mind map, which will form the roadmap for the next phase of its work. As expected, next steps, the CCWG accountability will continue to progress in all the work paths it has identified during the Frankfurt meeting, and is also planning a number of sessions in Singapore, including a community engagement session and two working sessions, which will include remote participation. And here you see some of the current status and next steps, as mentioned. So I said two working sessions in Singapore and an engagement session, and further information on this initiative can be found on its wiki space. And with that, I think I'm handing it over to Olaf.
Thank you very much, Marika. And my name is Olaf Nordling, and I'm supporting the Governmental Advisory Committee, or the GAC. Just to say that there are a few additional joint activities to mention, and let's start with the GAC GNSO Consultation Group on GAC Early Engagement in Policy Development Activities. Long name, but as the activities to improve communications between the GAC and the GNSO with a view to get earlier engagement in GNSO policy development processes to avoid that there be misunderstandings later on. And this group has been active since a little bit over a year and already led to some changes. For example, perhaps first and foremost, the appointment of a GNSO liaison to the GAC in the form of Mason Cole, which you may know, many of you. But that's not all of it. They have a number of recommendations which they will present during a GAC GNSO session on Sunday, the 8th of February, between 3 and 4:30 p.m. For discussion and hopefully decision on how to advance. And also the consultation group will hold its own stocktaking meeting on Monday between 12:30 and 2 p.m. in a meeting room called Indiana, but it's still in Singapore. And with that, I leave the floor to Mary Wong to tell you about other activities. Mary, take it away.
Thank you, Olaf. Hello, everybody. This is Mary Wong from ICANN staff, and 18 minutes ago, we started this call in Turkey, virtually speaking, moved to Europe, and I'm happy to say I'm speaking to you from Singapore, where we hope to welcome everyone in person or virtually to the ICANN meeting here in just over a week's time. So my first topic with you today is on one of the other cross-community working groups that members of our team are supporting, and this is the CWG for the Framework of Principles for Future CWGs, which is sometimes affectionately known as CWG Squared, as you see in the arrow there. This was a group that was charted by the CCNSO and the GNSO just under a year ago because a growing number in the community across various SOs and ACs started to agree that there are many more issues that are of cross-cutting interest across the various sectors of the ICANN community. And as we've seen from the newer CWGs, some of which Marika spoke about just a few minutes ago, there is therefore an increasing reliance on the use of CWGs to accomplish the work. However, what we don't currently have is a single uniform framework that contains guidance for how these groups should work. And when we talk about how they should work, we're really talking, as this CWG found in its initial studies, about a typical life cycle that goes in something like five phases, starting from the chartering and the formation through to the operations and the deliberations and decision-making of a group, down to what happens to its deliverables, what is the role of the ICANN board, and, of course, how do we ensure follow-up upon termination of the work. So the working group is looking at these five phases, and its most recent activity is the development of a checklist of sorts or a template for the first two phases of this life cycle. And the hope is that in Singapore, and you see here on the slide, that the meeting that they will be holding of the community is on Wednesday morning in the Moore Room, that you will be able to be there or representatives from your group, whichever group that might be across the ICANN community, will be able to provide it with some good feedback, with the aim being the next milestone, ICANN 53, where hopefully the full initial checklist will be ready for community feedback. And, of course, the ultimate hope is that this will feed into all the future work that this community will be doing, regardless of whatever cross-cutting issue it chooses to utilize this framework and this methodology for. So on that note, I am going to hand it over to, is it Lars?
It is. Hi, everybody. It's Lars, and Lars Hoffman and I will conclude the section on the cross-community working groups with a quick overview of the work of the CWG on country and territory names as top-level domains. This cross-community working group is tasked to draft a harmonized framework for the use of country and territory names as top-level domains, as its title strongly suggests, and to recommend next steps to both the GNSO and the CCNSO. The group has been active for about 6 months, and it is currently preparing a strawman options paper to lay out some of the possible routes towards such a framework, and that should be presented and discussed for the first time to and by the group in Singapore. The group has also submitted in December a letter to the GAC, whose sub-working group on the protection of geographic names deals with a somewhat overlapping issue. The group will meet face-to-face in Singapore, as I just referred to. I believe it's on Monday at 12:15, and it's looking to conclude its work, hopefully, by ICANN54 this autumn in Dublin. And with that, I'll pass it back to Marika.
Thank you very much, Lars. Took a bit of time to get off mute. So next, we'll look at some of the other projects that the GNSO is currently looking at, in addition to the work that is ongoing on the stewardship transition and enhancing accountability activities, as we've just spoken about. Let me just go to the next slide. However, as we only have limited time available today, we're only going to highlight some of these activities, noting that there are nearly 50 GNSO-related meetings scheduled for the ICANN meeting in Los Angeles. So first, we'll focus on translation and transliteration of contact information, and for that, I will hand it over to my colleague, Julie.
Thank you very much, Marika, and this is Julie Hedlund, and welcome, everyone. I'll cover this very briefly. I support this group along with my colleague Lars Hoffman. And of significant note is that in December of 2014, the PDP working group released an initial report. That report addresses the charter questions. There are two questions, whether it's desirable to translate or transliterate, or as the working group calls it, transform contact information into a single common language. And the second question is who should decide who should bear the burden of transforming contact information to a single language. That initial report is out for public comment, which ends on February the 1st at 2359 UTC. And following that, the working group will consider the comments that are received. Actually, they are doing so already, and they will continue to do so in Singapore. And we are foreseeing a report, a final report, coming out in May. The key arguments addressed in the initial report are arguments supporting mandatory transformation and arguments opposing mandatory transformation. Just to summarize, mandatory transformation could result in a more transparent, accessible, and more easily searchable database, could facilitate communication, avoid possible abuse, and might make it easier to cross-reference holders of domain names. On the other side of the argument opposing mandatory transformation are some concerns about accuracy, particularly relating to translation or transliteration of common nouns, and concerns about the expense of transforming contact information, as well as the usability of the transformed data. Now, the preliminary recommendations in the initial report are that there was no support for mandatory transformation. The working group recommends that it's not desirable to transform contact information and make that mandatory. They do suggest that registration directory services databases should be capable of receiving input in the form of non-Latin script contact information, and that data fields should be tagged in ASCII or Latin script to allow easy identification, that that the registered name holder should enter their contact information in the language or script used by the registrar, and that the registrar would and registry would assure that the data fields are consistent and do some verification. Here are some links for some additional information where you can reach, see the initial report, the public comments, and a recent webinar that was held on the initial report. And at this point, I want to thank you very much, and I will turn things over to my colleague, Mary Wong, who will talk to you about privacy and proxy services accreditation issues, policy development process.
Thank you, Julie. Hello, everybody. It's Mary Wong again. And as Julie has just said, I will be speaking to you about the one of the other PDPs that the GNSO is currently conducting. And given the mouthful for this title, Privacy and Proxy Services Accreditation Issues, this is normally and usually abbreviated to PPSAI. This is a group that was chartered by the GNSO Council. You see here on the timeline a little less than a year and a half ago. And I should say here that the timing of the work of this group has, to a large extent, been affected by an external factor. If you look at the quote on this slide about what this group was chartered to do, it is to develop policy recommendations regarding certain issues that were highlighted during the negotiations for the 2013 Registrar Accreditation Agreement, or RAA. As most, if not all, folks know, the 2013 RAA was successfully negotiated and those were concluded and is actually now operational. Following that and following the approval of that agreement by the board, the remaining issues that had been highlighted during that process and that had not been addressed as part of that process were noted to be issues relating to the accreditation of privacy and proxy services, and the board has asked the GNSO, therefore, to follow up by doing this PDP. The external factor that I spoke about is that this is a program that ICANN had already committed to doing, and in fact, in the current 2013 RAA, there is a temporary or interim specification that deals with some of the issues surrounding privacy and proxy services. This interim specification expires or is due to expire on the January the 1st, 2017, or upon ICANN's implementation of its accreditation program, whichever is earlier. And so this is in large part the external factor that is driving the work, the pace, and the timeline of this particular working group. The thing to look out for and to look forward to in the Singapore meeting next month is that since its formation and chartering, the group has been meeting very regularly and has come up with a set of preliminary agreement mandations that it would like to present to the community in Singapore. Some of these will be issues that if you've attended previous sessions with the group, you would have sketched with them their history of the discussion of some of these issues, and ultimately, following the Singapore meeting, again here I refer you to the timeline on this slide, the group hopes to complete all its initial deliberations and so be in a good position to publish its initial report for public comment shortly after the Singapore meeting. As David noted in his introduction and as Julie has illustrated with the Translation and Transliteration Working Group, public comment is an integral part of the PDP, and it is in reviewing the public comments it receives to its initial reports that all our working groups are able to refine and prepare the final report, which is what is sent to the GNSO Council for its review and hopefully adoption, which then moves to the board level for their review and adoption. So as I noted, the group has come to some preliminary agreement on a number of key concepts. These, some of them are listed in the slide. They follow the categories that the working group developed based on the 24 or so charter questions that the council asked it to consider as part of an accreditation program. And some of the highlights here, you notice that the group agreed early on that there should be no distinction in principle between a privacy or proxy service. And while most people on the call will know what those are, I should note here that they aren't identical services. What they do in relation to the WHOIS system, which allows anyone to access a free and publicly available database to look at who is behind the registration of any domain name in the generic TLD system. These services allow to a different extent the masking of some or all of that kind of identity or contact details. The group has decided that by treating these services alike, there are also some minimum mandatory requirements. In a large part, this is to also ensure that there are safeguards for registrants who may need the kind of protection afforded by these services, that certain mandatory provisions have to be included and published in the customer agreements, regardless of which type of service is being used. And on ICANN's part, the list of all the accredited providers that go through this program successfully has to be made publicly available. As with some of the requirements in the 2013 RAA, the group has also discussed and come to preliminary agreement on things like a provider being able or having to provide a designated contact point, as well as developing a list of the sort of requirements relating to the type of illegal activity that has to be reported. And the last two bullet points here that I want to highlight is particularly interesting because the questions of relay and reveal have been very difficult questions for the ICANN community, including the GNSO, for quite a long period of time. And while previous efforts have touched on how to deal with them, they haven't gone as far as this particular group. And so you see here some of the key preliminary recommendations, including the mandatory forwarding or relay of certain types of electronic communications, as well as where reveal is concerned. And this relates really to a request that a provider would receive from a third party to either disclose third party the customer's identity or details, or to publish publicly in the full who is the customer's identity and contact details. And so you can imagine some of the complexities that go into trying to ensure accessibility on the one hand and protection on the other. But some of the baseline mandatory requirements discussed in detail are listed here on the slide that the group has agreed to. And for that, we are very happy with the progress. That said, there are also some issues for which the working group has not yet reached consensus, and so the Singapore session will be very helpful to the group as it starts to bring its initial report together. A couple of the things that I wanted to highlight about these particular issues are here on the slide, and that includes whether or not a domain name that is registered and is used for online financial transactions that is associated with commercial activities should be permitted to use a privacy or proxy service. What do you do when there is a request by a third party for a provider to relay certain requests to its customer, and that is done, but there is a persistent delivery failure? What should be the process of escalation? What should be the obligations on the provider? And in relation to reveal, which, as I've highlighted, there are two aspects, disclosure or publication, that there are different kinds of third parties that make that kind of request, including law enforcement. So there are some difficult questions that the group is currently struggling with as regards these particular issues, and we're looking forward to the Singapore discussions to get some community assistance in preparing, as I noted, their initial report. So here are some additional links and information, including the meeting that the group will be holding in Singapore on the Wednesday. And on behalf of the group, I look forward to seeing you and welcoming your participation physically or remotely, as well as, of course, to your and your community's input on the initial report when it's published after Singapore. On that note, I'm going to hand over to Marika.
Thank you, Mary. So next we'll be talking about policy and implementation. So there has been an increased focus over the last couple of years on how to deal with policy and implementation related questions, such as what happens if a policy issue is identified during the implementation phase, who decides whether something is policy or implementation, and do we actually have sufficiently clear processes in place to deal with these kind of questions. So as a result of those conversations, the GNSO Council formed a working group to focus on a number of questions that specifically relate to policy and implementation in the context of the GNSO. So this working group has now published its initial recommendations report for public comment. In short, the working group is putting forward the following preliminary recommendations for our community consideration. So first of all, in response to one of its charter questions, which asks for recommendations concerning a set of principles that would underpin any GNSO policy and implementation-related discussions, the working group is recommending adhering to a set of principles that it has outlined in Section 4 of the initial recommendations report. And those principles are to be used when policy or implementation-related issues arise in the implementation phase. The principles are divided into principles that cover both policy and implementation, those that primarily apply to policy, and those that apply primarily to implementation. Furthermore, in addition to the only formal process GNSO currently has, which is the policy development process, or PDP, the working group is also proposing three new standardized processes for GNSO deliberations, namely the GNSO input process, or GIP, which is to be used for those instances for which the GNSO Council intends to provide non-binding advice, which is expected to typically concern topics that are not GTLD specific and for which no policy recommendations have been developed to date. And non-binding advice in this context means advice that has no binding force on the party it's provided to. So, for example, this process could be used to provide input on the ICANN strategic plan or recommendations from an accountability and transparency review team. It is the expectation that such input would then be treated in a similar manner as public comments are currently considered by the entity to which the input is provided. Secondly, there is the GNSO guidance process, or GDP, which is to be used in those instances for which the GNSO Council intends to provide binding guidance to the ICANN board, but which is not expected to result in new contractual obligations for contracted parties. And binding guidance in this context means advice that has a binding force on the ICANN board to consider the guidance, and which can then only be rejected by a vote of more than two-thirds of the board if the board determines that such guidance is not in the best interest of the ICANN community or ICANN. It is expected that this would typically involve clarification of or advice on existing GTLE policy recommendations. This could, for example, be in response to a specific request from the ICANN board, but it could also be at the initiative of the GNSO Council to an issue that it has identified. For example, such a process could have been used, if it would have been in existence at the time, in relation to the request from the ICANN board to provide input on the .brand registry agreement, or also known as Specification 13. And thirdly, the GNSO expedited policy development process. This process is to be used in those instances in which the GNSO Council intends to develop recommendations that would result in new contractual obligations for contracted parties that meet the criteria for consensus policies, as well as the qualifying criteria to initiate such an expedited PDP. The qualifying criteria are proposed to be to address a narrowly defined policy issue that was identified and scoped after either the adoption of a GNSO policy recommendation by the ICANN board or the implementation of such an adopted recommendation, or two, to provide new or additional policy recommendations on a specific policy issue that has been substantially scoped previously, such that extensive pertinent background information already exists. For example, if an issue report for a possible PDP was not initiated at an earlier stage, or part of a previous PDP that was not completed, or developed through other projects such as a GDP. Further details on each of these proposed processes can be found in the initial recommendations report. As a result of its deliberations on the three implementation-related charter questions, the working group recommends that the policy development process manual be modified to require the creation of an implementation review team following the adoption of PDP recommendations by the ICANN board, but at the same time allow the GNSO Council the flexibility to not create an IRT in exceptional circumstances. For example, if another IRT is already in place that could deal with the PDP recommendations. The working group also recommends the adoption of the implementation review team principles as outlined in Annex H of the preliminary of the initial recommendations report, and that should be followed as part of the creation as well as the operation of implementation review teams. So to provide your input on the initial recommendations report, you can do so via the traditional public comment form, to which you see the link here on the screen. But in addition, the working group has also developed a survey that you can be used as an alternative way to provide input. And again, the link is up here on the screen. In addition, the working group is also hosting a session at the ICANN meeting in Singapore to be able to provide further details on its recommendations, as well as any answer any questions that there may be. So this session is scheduled for Wednesday afternoon from 3:30 to 5 local time. So before handing it over to my next colleague, I briefly wanted to touch upon a number of other GNSO projects that you might be interested in. And so first of all, there's the IGO-INGO Access Security of Rights Protection Mechanism Policy Development Process Working Group. This effort is looking into whether to amend existing dispute resolution processes or create potentially new processes to address specific concerns of IGO and INGOs. This working group is actually planning an all-day face-to-face meeting right after the ICANN meeting in Singapore, which is intended to assist in meeting its target date of July, August of this year to publish an initial report for public comment. The inter-registrar transfer policy, Part D, policy development process recommendations will be up for ICANN board consideration at the ICANN meeting in Singapore. And provided that these are adopted, the GNSO Council will form an implementation review team, which is to work with ICANN staff to ensure that implementation happens conform the intent of the policy recommendations. last but not least, two other other initiatives that are not meeting in Singapore, but which intend to have reports out for public comment later this year, are the Data and Metrics for Policymaking Working Group and a new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Discussion Group. So if you're interested to learn more details about either of those initiatives or any of the other projects that the GNSO is working on, and I would like to encourage you to visit this page that puts all GNSO-related information that should aid your preparation for the next ICANN meeting at your fingertips. Of course, if you have any immediate questions, please feel free to ask them at the end of our webinar or type them in the chat, and we'll do our best to answer them. And with that, I'll be handing it over to Bart Boswinkel to tell you about the Country Code Names Supporting Organization.
Thank you, Marika. Welcome to a brief update of what is happening in the CCNSO. I will touch upon a few topics. First of all, the framework of interpretation. Those of you who have attended previous webinars know this is a long ongoing project within the CCNSO together with the GAC. A little bit on what is happening within the CCNSO with regard to the IANA stewardship and accountability processes, and some miscellaneous topics. So, framework of interpretation. What is will happen in Singapore? As some of you will know, the CCNSO Council adopted the final report of the Framework of Interpretation Working Group at the Los Angeles meeting, but this was an interim adoption awaiting support or endorsement from the Governmental Advisory Committee, which is one of the other chartering organizations of the Framework of Interpretation Group. So what in Singapore, the GAC, or the Framework of Interpretation Working Group, will seek support on its Framework of Interpretation and the recommendations related to it from the Governmental Advisory Committee. The final report was submitted to the GAC before the LA meeting, together with at the same time it was submitted to the CCNSO, and it's part of the CCNSO GAC agenda. For those who are not so familiar with the FOI will provide, or the Framework of Interpretation will provide color and depth to the current policy relating to delegation and redelegation of CCTLDs. So, to be clear, it is not a new policy, it is just an interpretation of the existing basic policy document, which is RFC 5091. What is out of scope of this working group is the IANA functions contract and the applicable law of countries and relating to their CCTLDs, which remains paramount. So, especially in the context of the IANA stewardship transition process and the accountability process, say the framework of interpretation is relevant as well. And as you may have heard it and may have seen, it came up in the discussions around these two in these two processes and was highlighted by the CCTLD participant and members of these working groups. So, as I said, the focus is on delegation and redelegation of CCTLDs, and the topics are consent of the current CCTLD manager, the interpretation and definition of what used to be known as the local internet community, which is now called, or which is renamed and going back to RFC 1591 to significantly interested parties, and the revocation and transfer of a CCTLD, also and formerly known as unconsented redelegations. So a second topic I want to touch upon briefly is what is happening in the CCNSO regarding the IANA stewardship and accountability processes. Now, first of all, as with the other communities under the ICANN umbrella, for the CEC community, it is of the highest priority, both for members of the CCNSO and for non-members of the CCNSO, and this is also reflected in the participation of the CCTLD community in, for example, the cross-community working group on the, say, the cross-community stewardship working group. There will be two major sessions at the CCNSO, and I'll go more in detail, a little bit more in detail into these sessions itself, but say the format of these sessions will be, first of all, explaining the process and the panel discussion with the community and amongst CCTLD members and participants to solicit the view of the CCTLDs present. I want to highlight one aspect of what the CCNSO is doing as well is they have created a CCNSO coordination committee under the chairmanship of the CCNSO chair Byron Holland in order to coordinate the CCTLD efforts with respect to these processes. All members of the CWG and the CCWG are ex officio members of this coordination committee, and they meet twice every 2 weeks. So, with regard to the other sessions, the CCNSO meeting, or with regard to the sessions themselves, first of all, the CCNSO Council will discuss the decision-making process it wants to enter into regarding the proposal of the CWG and the recommendations coming out of the CCWG, and probably present their findings to the community itself, and it is one of the topics they want to discuss at the joint meetings with the GNSO and at large. The CCTLD community discussions themselves will focus on the current state of affairs regarding the CWG state stewardship. That will be on Tuesday afternoon, 9 February, and the substantive elements of the CWG accountability will be discussed on Wednesday afternoon prior to the CCNSO Council meeting. Some other topics that will be discussed by the CCNSO, and that's the outcome of, say, the working groups and other work of the CCNSO. First of all, there will be, as I said, the annual council workshop. In this case, it will again, and this is a recurring topic of these workshops, is the roles and responsibilities of the councillors. And a particular one is the outreach and engagement of the CCTLD community in general in the work of the CCNSO, and in particular on the in the two main processes, so the stewardship and the accountability process. During the meeting on Tuesday, there will be a presentation of the Incident Response Working Group. This working group is focused on creating a secure email list to inform and alert the CCTLDs of security incidents that may affect the CCTLD registries. This has been an ongoing process. As usual, there will be a discussion of the CCNSO Strategic and Operational Planning Working Group and their findings and input of the five-year, in this case, the five-year operational planning process. And there is Tech Day, which is on Monday, which is open to all, with an interest in operational and technical topics. And the program group of Tech Day has been expanded to include representatives from other communities as well, to make it as interesting as possible for those, not only from the CCTLD, but for the broader community. And finally, there will be the usual sessions at the CCNSO meeting on, say, new CCTLD or CCTLD-related topics like changes of policies of CCTLD, marketing activities, and an update from the regional organizations. More information on the CCNSO meeting can be found at the CCNSO dedicated meeting page. You can see the URL. For those interested in the work of the CCNSO Strategic and Operational Plan, you can see the URL of this particular working group. And those of you with an interest in the FOY final report, it is posted and can be found on the Framework of Interpretation Working Group webpage, and the URL is included as well. And that ends my brief update of what is happening at the CCNSO. And now I'd like to hand over to my colleague, Barbara Roseman.
Thank you, Bart. I'll be addressing the, I'll be updating on the address supporting organization and the regional internet registry. Over the course of the last period, the RARs have had meetings in all regions. Over 50 policy proposals were made in total, 19 concluded with consensus and being implemented by the respective RAR. Additionally, AFRINIC introduced a new Who Is implementation. AFRINIC and LACNIC work to manage their remaining IPv4 resources and support IPv6 deployment. APNIC improved their processes through some member-supported actions, and ARIN prepared for IPv4 depletion in their area and to improve their number resource policy manual. The Rights Entity introduced a new management interface for their resource certification, which deals with RPKI, and reduced workload and facilitated transfers for their members. Regarding the work on the ICG, CRISP is the consolidated RIR IANA stewardship proposal team that the RIRs produced to create their proposal. They had a mailing list developed, and they submitted their final response to the ICG on 15 January. All the different regions participated in this by having teams that joined in on the final CRISP project. And I'd like to hand this over to Steve now, Steve Shang, for the Root Server System Advisory Committee update. Oh, I'm sorry, Carlos will be presenting it right now.
Thanks, Barbara. This is Carlos Reyes, and I will be presenting on the Root Server System Advisory Committee. As an overview, the RSAC is comprised of 12 voting appointed Root Server Operator representatives, three Root Zone Management Partners, which include VeriSign, NTIA, and IANA, three liaisons, and the current co-chairs for this year are Lars Johan Lehmann from NetNod in Sweden, the iRoot Root Server Operator, and Trippi Sinha from the University of Maryland, the DRoot Operator. Currently, the RSEC is meeting monthly via teleconference and, of course, in person at ICANN public meetings. Since its restructure, the RSEC has formed the Caucus of Root Server System and DNS Experts. There are currently 53 members. Recently, they launched a new work party to focus on root zone TTLs. And two work parties completed their work since ICANN 51 in Los Angeles, which has led to the finalization and approval of RSEC 001 and RSEC 002, two advisory documents. RSEC 001 is titled Recommendations on Service Expectations of Root Servers. And as of right now, it has not been published, but it will be published in tandem with an RFC from the Internet Architecture Board. Essentially, RSEC 001 describes the best practice service to be provided by root servers and defines the operational expectations that users might reasonably anticipate. In total, there are 18 expectations articulated in a variety of different areas, including infrastructure, service capacity, operational security, among others. On to RSEC 002. RSEC 002 was published, and it identifies and recommends an initial set of parameters establishing a baseline and identifying trends for root server for the root server system. These parameters include the size of the overall root zone, number of queries, and response type and size distribution, among others. The RSEC is recommending in this advisory that the measurements be collected in a central location and stored in a common format for ongoing analysis. And the implementation of these measurements will form an early warning system that will assist in detecting and mitigating any effects associated with the growth in the DNS root zone, as well as help identify any changes that might challenge the normal performance of the root server system. So as you can see, the RSEC has definitely re-engaged in the ICANN community. And with that, I will hand it over to Steve Shang for an update from the Security and Stability Advisory Committee.
Thank you, Carlos. Since ICANN 51, the Security and Stability Advisory Committee issued SAC 69, the last of a three-part series advice on IANA stewardship transition. In SAC 69, the ESSEC describes the way in which NTIA currently contributes to the security, stability, and resiliency of the IANA function activities. And it presents questions and issues for the community to address in order to preserve the SSR of IANA function through and beyond the transition. And it makes seven recommendations to each of the questions. The first set of recommendations is regarding root zone management. First, the ESSEC recommends any proposal to replace NTIA's final authorization of root zone changes with an alternative be at least reliable, resilient, and efficient as the current process. in drafting this recommendation, the ESSEC understands, noting that the stability and efficiency of the existing structure, process, and mechanisms for the rules of management. The second recommendation is effective arrangement should be made for the reliable and timely performance of all aspects of the rules of management process post-transition, including inter-organization coordination, if in the post-transition rules of management process involve more than one rules of management partners. Today, the arrangement, there are two arrangements. One is the IANA functions contract between NTIA and ICANN as the IANA function operator, and then the cooperative agreement between NTIA and VeriSign as the rules of maintainer. So as NTIA is transition out of its current role, effective arrangements should be made. And the last recommendation here is NTIA should clarify the processes and legal framework associated with the role of the rules of maintainer after transition. This is related to the second recommendation. The next set of recommendations is regard to the operational communities, the names, the numbers, and the protocol parameters that are developing proposals. The first one is to determine whether or not the requirements and deliverables defined in the IANA functions contract should be retained, and if so, which ones, whether additional controls are needed, and how by whom they should be administered. This one has already been addressed by the cross-community working group on IANA stewardship transition. The second recommendation is determine whether or not existing mechanisms outside the IANA functions contract are sufficiently robust to hold the IANA functions operator accountable. And if so, if they are not, what additional accountability mechanisms will be needed? The next recommendation is for these communities is to review and, if necessary, enhance its policy development process to ensure that all of the instructions that it provides to the IANA functions operator are clear and implementable so that the IANA functions operator are not left to interpret the policy she's being given. So it's clear and implementable. Investigate and clarify the process for handling the possibility of governmental sanctions and restrictions. This is related to the protocol for obtaining the OFAC licenses following the stewardship transition. And last but not least, is consider the extent to which the importance of transparency and freedom from improper influence in the performance of the IANA functions might require additional mechanisms or other safeguards. The ESSEC, this is a brief overview of the advisory. The ESSEC will provide detailed update to the community at ICANN Singapore meeting. So that's a quick update. Next, I'll hand over to my colleague Olaf to provide an update on GAC. Olaf?
Thank you very much, Steve, and hello all. You're back with me, Olaf, again from a Brussels suburb for a few words about the Governmental Advisory Committee, or GAC, which is an advisory committee within ICANN that currently has 148 governments as members and also 32 IGOs, intergovernmental organizations, as observers. And their mission is to provide advice to the ICANN board on public policy matters or on public policy aspects on any matter. So what are they up to in Singapore? Well, regarding policy-related activities, well, there are quite a few of those. And first and foremost, like many others, I would perhaps say all others, it's the IANA stewardship transition and ICANN accountability. And it should be noted that the GAC is one of the chartering organizations for the cross-community working group for names within the stewardship transition, and also the cross-constituency working group on accountability. So it's quite important, and will be devoted considerable time in Singapore by the GAC. Also, Bart mentioned the framework of interpretation for CCTLDs, and that's also high on the agenda. The CCNSO is waiting for endorsement by the GAC, and the GAC has a number of questions which will be sorted out, hopefully, by with the session together with the CCNSO. Human rights and international law is, well, clearly a public policy matter, and it will be discussed how this can be reflected in ICANN's activities. There are also remaining issues with the new GTLD program. Would you believe it? Protection of IGO acronyms and Red Cross and Red Crescent national names is such a one of quite long-standing. The implementation, the detailed implementation of what GAC has provided as advice regarding safeguards is also subject for discussion within the GAC and most certainly also with the board. Also, country names on the second level, where the board is awaiting advice from the GAC, and the GAC has promised to deliver that, which we certainly all are looking forward to. There will also be a session for the community that's on Wednesday, starting at 10:30, in the GAC room, on geographic names, and that's for future rounds. There's a GAC working group, previously a sub-working group, that produced a draft, and this has been published for community input, and the community has provided a lot of input, and this will be discussed and advanced during this Wednesday session. And of course, many of these matters will be dealt with in meetings with other parties within the ICANN structure, like the GNSO, CCNSO, also meeting the NOMCOM, and most certainly the board, which is probably the most visited and most attended GAC meeting of them all. This is not all. There are also process matters to address. The Accountability and Transparency Review Team, they produced quite a lot of recommendations, particularly pertaining to the GAC, and those are being addressed by a number of working groups within the GAC and also external involving the board, and also what I mentioned earlier, the GNSO GAC consultation group for early engagement that was much prompted by the HRT2 recommendations. A little modification, some modifications are needed for the GAC operating principles that will be discussed. And there will be also be a few updates from the ICANN compliance team and also a briefing on the DNS market. So, understandably enough, the GAC is pretty busy, starting at midday on Saturday and closing at midday on Thursday in Singapore. And it deserves to be noted that all sessions are open, with one exception, and that's the communique drafting session on Wednesday afternoon. So you're most welcome to join the GAC meeting room, which is named Collier, and where you can enjoy the proceedings in any of the six UN languages. We have interpretation to those, and also Portuguese. So with that, I conclude on the GAC, and back across the Atlantic to my colleague Heidi Ulrich to talk. Tell you a little about the GAC, or ALAC, sorry. So take it away, Heidi.
Thank you, Ola. Hello, everyone. My name is Heidi Ulrich. I'm the Senior Director for At Large. I am based in the Los Angeles ICANN office. Today I'm joined by two of my teammates, Ariel Liang, At Large Policy Coordinator, who is based in the Washington, D.C. office, and Sylvia Vivenko, Manager At Large Regional Affairs, who is based in Lima, Peru. We are delighted to give you a brief update on the activities of the 15-member At-Large Advisory Committee, or the ALAC, chaired by Alan Greenberg, and the At-Large Community, consisting of the five regional at-large organizations and currently 182 at-large structures. I will first go over a little bit of the hot topics, and Ariel will continue in more detail on that. In Singapore, the ALAC will be implementing a new strategy for their activities at public meetings. This strategy focuses their discussions on two or three hot topics in order to allow sufficient time for discussion on these topics. In Singapore, the two main hot topics will be the following. The first is the NTIA IANA Function Stewardship Transition. Weekly calls of the At-Large Ad Hoc Working Group on the Transition of U.S. Government Stewardship of the IANA Function, or Transition Working Group for short, have been held since August 2014. And these frequent meetings have allowed the ALAC position to be developed through a bottom-up process. The ALAC favors an inside ICANN solution rather than creating a contract co. And this hot topic will be discussed during ALAC meetings on Sunday and Tuesday in Singapore. And also the transition working group will be meeting on Tuesday, the 10th of February, between 1730 and 1900 in the VIP room. The second hot topic is ICANN accountability and transparency. The ALAC position is to ensure strong accountability and multi-stakeholder involvement in all ICANN decisions. This hot topic will be discussed during the ALAC meetings on Sunday and Tuesday. I would now like to hand the floor over to Ariel, who will provide an update on ALAC policy advice development activities and provide more details about the ALAC's work on hot topics, as well as their ongoing issue of the public interest commitments, or the PICs. Ariel?
Thank you, Heidi. My name is Ariel Liam, At-Large Policy Coordinator. Since the end of ICANN 51, Alan Greenberg, a former ALAC liaison to the GNSO, has become the ALAC chair who oversees policy advice development activities of the ALAC. Over the past 4 months, the ALAC submitted 5 policy advice statements. 2 statements are concerning public interest commitments. During the public forum at ICANN 51, the ALAC called for a freeze on the most sensitive Category 1 TLDs as defined by the GAC, until appropriate public interest safeguards are put in place. To reinforce its position, the ALAC submitted a follow-up statement in November last year. Gaining momentum, the ALAC advice has rallied support from the business constituency, the GAC, and other sources. Last week, the ALAC met with members from the board new GTLD process committee and engaged in a productive discussion on the PDB consensus policy and ICANN compliance follow-up measures related to the public interest commitments. ALAC's concerns will be further discussed at the upcoming NGPC meeting. In response to the public comment request on the IANA naming-related functions draft transition proposal, the ALAC submitted a substantive statement that championed an internal to ICANN proposal. The ALAC believes that ICANN can reliably perform the IANA services and should continue to do so unless it is incapable or unwilling to carry out these functions. To ensure that this happens, additional accountability measures need to be put in place. The ALAC position has been developed in conjunction with the IANA Issues Working Group within the at-large community. The working group hosted 13 teleconferences since ICANN 51. In addition, 3 webinars were held to enhance at-large members' understanding in this issue. Furthermore, at-large members have been actively contributing in the Enhancing ICANN Accountability Cross-Community Working Group. Leon Sanchez, an ALAC member, has been working as a co-chair. Over to you, Heidi.
Thank you very much, Ariel. We'd now like to turn to ALAC at large and later on RALO activities in Singapore. In Singapore, ALAC will be holding 22 formal meetings. The ALAC will be meeting with the ICANN Board of Directors on Tuesday, the 10th of February, between 8:30 and 9:30 in the Padong meeting room. ALAC topics to be discussed include their hot topics of NTIA IANA function stewardship transition and ICANN accountability and transparency issues, as well as progress on the implementation of the recommendations from the second at-large summit. Meetings will be held with the CCNSO, GAC, as well as the NOMCOM and ESSAC leadership. Also, senior ICANN staff will be presenting updates on such topics as the GSE and government engagement, the fiscal year 16 budget process, and information management activities. Six at-large working groups will be meeting face-to-face to facilitate progress in both policy and process activities. These are the at-large metrics working group, Sunday at 17:30 to 18:30, the ICANN Academy working group, Monday 12:30 to 13:30, at-large accessibility working group, Tuesday 12:15 to 13:15, the at-large new GTLD working group, Tuesday 16:30 to 17:30, the transition working group, again, Tuesday 17:30 to 1900, and the at-large technology task force, Thursday 8 to 9. Of note, following the successful interaction of hubs during the ICANN meeting in Los Angeles, during the meeting in Singapore, at-large structures will serve as hubs for remote participants on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday of the ICANN meeting. And nearly 20 at-large structures and ISOC chapters have applied to serve as hubs. I will now hand the floor over to Sylvia Vivanco, who will update you on the activities of the five regional at-large organizations during ICANN 52. Sylvia?
Thank you, Heidi. This is Sylvia Vivanco, Manager at Large Regional Affairs. I'll talk about the RALO activities in Singapore. AFRALO will hold the AFRALO African Joint Meeting on the theme ICANN Accountability on Wednesday 11th from 1400 to 1530 p.m. APRALO will hold this monthly meeting on Tuesday the 10th, time 1330 to 1430 p.m. One of the highlights of this meeting will be the signature of the cooperation agreement with GOT-Asia. There will be a discussion on the progress and implementation of the APRALO APIC Hub pilot framework, and approximately 20 self-financed LSS will attend this meeting. NARALO will hold this monthly meeting on Thursday the 12th, from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Among other issues, NARALO will sign an MOU for cooperation with the North American Registry, ERIN. Then, the RALO chairs will meet with the ALAC in a leadership team working session on Wednesday 11, time 7 a.m. to 8:15 a.m. This meeting will discuss the strategic objectives for at-large and RALO actions to implement those objectives. The RALO secretariats will meet on Wednesday 11 from 12 to 13:30, and this is a customary meeting with the five RALO secretariats where they will discuss several cross-RALO issues such as the At-Large 360 review, the new At-Large outreach documents, performance metrics, At-Large 2 recommendations, and relationships between the RALOs and the RIRs. See the full agendas in the link provided. And now I would like to invite you to the APRALO Singapore Showcase 2015 Celebrating Diversity. APRALO event is scheduled for Wednesday 11 from 1800 to 2100 at the Meeting Room VIP and Stanford Ballroom. This is a community celebration inviting all the ICANN community to learn more about the achievements of APRALO. The evening will showcase how APRALO is engaging a diverse community of 36 LSS spread out in Asia and the Pacific Islands in 21 countries. Approximately 20 APRALO LSS will attend this event, and this will provide an opportunity to meet and greet them personally. The speakers at the event include ICANN's President and CEO, Fadi Shehade, ICANN's Board Chairman, Steve Crocker, ALAC Chair Alan Greenberg, APRALO's Chair Siranus Badanyan, among other community members who will also speak at the event. And join us for a very special music and dance Dikir Barat performance by students from the Malaysian school Sekolah Menengah Sains Kubang Pasu. We will also have a Chinese calligraphy demonstration by brush and ink. And given that the ICANN meeting is taking place during the Chinese New Year festivities, we'll take this opportunity to celebrate the Chinese Lunar New Year as well. So please join us to celebrate APRALO's cultural diversity and the achievements of the at-large community. Thank you very much, and over to you, Benedetta.
Thank you very much, Sylvia. I would now like to open the floor for questions to the Policy Development Support Team. If you've dialed into the audio bridge, please press star 1 and record your name clearly. If you're listening to the Adobe Connect room, please type your questions on the chat pod, and we'll reply to you either on the chat or verbally. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question from the audio bridge, please press star 1 and record your name clearly. While we wait for some questions to come through, I'd like to address the questions that were submitted by attendees prior to the webinar, which we have answered on the slide that you can see on the screen. The first question addressed the NTIA IANA functions transition process, and we have provided a link for more information about this topic, as you can see on the screen. The second question asks for more information or an update about who is related policy discussions and working groups. And the Governmental Advisory Committee, or the GAC, has recently asked the same question. And in response, ICANN staff prepared an overview, which can be found on the link that's provided on the screen. The third question that we received was about how we can balance the domain name industry, and is it possible to publicly open the domain auction results. So for more information about this, we're referring you to the Contractual Compliance and the new GTLDs program auction website. We don't appear to have any questions on the audio bridge, so I'll move on to the next section, which is about how to stay updated with the Policy Development Support Team. So to stay updated, you can contact us at policy-staff@icann.org. Alternatively, you can also follow us on Twitter following the Twitter handle that you can see on the slide on the screen. You can also subscribe to our monthly policy update by clicking on the URL provided on the screen, which is available in Arabic, Chinese, English, French, Russian, and Spanish. If you're new to ICANN or the policy development process and would like to take part in working group work, you can also join the GNSO newcomer webinar sessions, which are basically informal get-togethers, which are chaired by community members, where newcomers may ask questions about joining working groups, and more experienced community members can also brush up on their basics. The next session is scheduled for the 12th of March, and you're all encouraged to join. The announcement will be sent out in February, and with that, I would like to turn it over to David Olive to conclude the webinar.
Thank you, Benedetta, and members of the policy team for providing this good information to our community members. I just wanted to point out that we are 27 members of this staff located in 9 countries, 5 time zones, and speaking 12 languages. And in fact, the speakers on tonight's webinar were in every geographic region where ICANN has a hub office or an engagement office. So we're here to serve you both close and far. And we hope to see you in person in Singapore, or if not, via remote participation in the sessions that are of interest to you that we highlighted today in following the policy development activities at ICANN. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your participation and wish you safe travels if you're on your way to Singapore, and good evening, good afternoon, or good morning, wherever you may be. Thank you very much.